Little mice fell in a bucket of cream. The first mouse quickly gave up and drowned. The second mouse wouldn't quit. He struggled so hard that eventually he churned that cream into butter and crawled out. Gentlemen, as of this moment, I am that second mouse.
It's amazing. He's talking about motorcycle insurance.
Now let's start the show. Step out of the cold. We come from the cold.
What is my
problems? Tell us to fuck off.
What a stupid
sound. Welcome back, folks. Hope you're emotionally traumatized again. We are back for another episode of the Second Mouse Podcast. Again, Gatto is still negotiating the debt ceiling crisis.
He's not doing a good job of it because, like, it looks like we were heading towards, what, 14th Amendment territory?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Gatto's a real ball buster, and I don't imagine that Kevin McCarthy is somebody who likes to get his, you know, chops busted all the time. He's probably real sensitive.
Gatto's like, Gatto walks into Kevin McCarthy's office. He goes, I have an answer to this debt ceiling crisis. Let's ask ChatGPT what they think.
Yeah. You know, I would also see as like an intimidation play from Gatto, like eating those like, you know, pickled vegetables you can get in the store, like just like fishing like some pickled cauliflower out of the jar and then just sucking on his fingers.
Like jardinier.
Yeah, yeah, like the carrots and the pepperoncinis, and he's just like, let me ask you a question.
He doesn't even eat them. He just sucks the vinegar out of them and
yes,
then throws them on the floor. No, I don't eat them. No. I don't eat them. I just suck on the vinegar.
Kevin McCarthy sits back on his like very expensive couch and then like just feels in between the cushions and it's just all soggy vegetables.
No. There's still a little bit more vinegar in that one. Don't throw it out yet.
Hey, you said we were going to come back and talk about this later. I wanted to make sure I had some snacks laying around.
Hey, he's not here to defend himself. I love it.
No. This is what he gets. This is what he deserves for not being here.
Yeah. I imagine he talks like a 1940s detective. Like,
look here, she.
Almost like Columbo. Like, listen, this debt ceiling crisis. What do you know about it?
Or it's that skit from I Think You Should Leave where McCarthy's like, we're meeting at 12:30. And he's like, but 12:30 is lunch. Yeah.
You can't do that.
We can't meet at that time.
That show is so fucking incredible. I one of the few things that I like quote pretty consistently.
Yeah.
The hat skit. You ever see the one with the where he's wearing like the court transcript of like his dumb hat?
Yeah.
He's got those fucking dice in his fucking pocket.
Oh, man. Well, we got a good show for you all tonight. It's going to be a quick one because we got other things to do. But I wanted to just get us kicked off something that I was thinking about the other day. And frankly, it bothered me. The plot for The Parent Trap is fucking wild if you actually think about it.
Wow, you just came out with a fucking 98 mile per hour fastball right there.
Went right at your chin.
First off, you wear that fucking sweater again around me and we're going to have fisticuffs, okay? You see what you're wearing. Ever wear that shit around me ever again.
Well, thank God you're 700 miles away, so you're fine.
I'm in your fucking walls, DeRoma, okay?
But I was thinking about...
Turn the heat on. It's cold in here.
I don't know what I got me to think about this, but I was thinking, like, I don't know how we just, like, watched The Parent Trap as kids, and we're like, yes, this is a realistic film. This movie makes total sense. The first and foremost thing that bothers me is like everybody in that film doesn't realize the two people in that film it's based around look exactly alike.
So, okay. Isn't the one British?
Yes.
How did they end up? They all go, like end up at the same like summer camp, right?
So did you never see The Parent Trap?
No, I did. Like, but it's like I'm not like rewatching the fucking Parent Trap like I'm watching Goodfellas, you know? Like I'm not doing a yearly watch
or
on
He's
it.
All That.
Of course. I love my Starbucks referenced 40 times in a movie.
So the premise of Parent Trap is that apparently Dennis Quaid...
No, I know the premise. So basically they meet, they realize they were like long lost twins that were separated through divorce and their plot is to get together so that their parents get back together.
Yes.
Fully get that. But like, isn't one of the girls like moves to London?
Yes.
And like, how do they end up in the same summer camp?
Apparently, like, American summer camps are all the rage in England. I don't know how. But the one thing that bothers, not really bothers me, but something I really thought about is, like, in order for these two people to not know each other and have no memory of one another, they had to have been separated very, very young. Like,
babies, essentially. Yeah.
Right? And my thought is, like, I can't imagine Dennis Quaid with, like, an 8-month-year-old child or a 3-month-year-old.
Imagine Randy Quaid with an 8-month-old child.
I don't want to get – no. No. I'm not doing that.
What, you know what's crazy about it, too, is that, now that you bring this up, this is kind of insane. I never thought about this. Basically, the one parent doesn't see the other kid ever.
Ever.
Ever. So it's like you have twins. Like, I know they look alike, but like they're not the same person. So like it's an individual that you're like, I'm never going to see my child ever again.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's where it got really confusing for me.
That's
I was like
dark.
Yeah. Like I hate this person so much. I don't even want to see my child ever again.
So he like theoretically never saw the other kid and didn't give a fuck about it.
Yeah.
And like same with like imagine like separating a mother from one of their child like their children and like no we're not gonna talk about it we're not like it's not like we just decided it'd probably be better like I mean there's really no excuse they're monsters they should go to jail
I agree and the like, other Dennis Quaid thing too, gulag like, you telling me that none of you like Dennis Quaid never called his ex wife and is like hey I forgot the fucking password for the cable. Or I forgot the phone number for the cable company. Do you have it on hand? Oh, by the way, how is my child that I have not seen in years?
Like, you're not letting, like, you're basically not agreeing to any which way that the child is raised. And, like, wow. You kind of blew my mind there, Tom.
And the thing that is the real kicker is not only do you have this movie, but you have almost a carbon copy film, except with the twins from Full House, where it's Steve Guttenberg instead of Dennis Quaid, where they separate, the twins find each other at a summer camp, and it's like, oh my God. So there are two different production companies that put together a movie where their parents were essentially like CPS, like case studies of like child neglect, where in both movies, both sets of parents were like, I hate you so much. I am willing to never, ever speak to you or this child that I have a carbon copy of in my living room.
I mean, listen, I've had some bad breakups in my life and like, I don't necessarily want to see, but like, I feel like it doesn't matter when you have kids, like you're stuck with that person, love them or hate them. It doesn't really matter. And like,
but you love the exact same child.
I know.
So you can't hate the other one.
I mean, listen, I get it. Oh, it's a fucking movie and like you got to suspend reality. But like that's a pretty big reality. Like you can't have a movie that's grounded in reality and then at the same time be like, yeah, I just, you know, I didn't care. I never saw this fucking kid. Like who gives a shit? And it's like we just separated you. Like, and also like separating twins from each other is like kind of like evil.
Right.
Because, like, they apparently, like, I mean, I don't know how real it is about their, like, the twin connection, but, like, separating siblings from each other and, like, not ever letting the other one, and, like, the one gets to go to London and the other one has to, like, live in, like, a fucking
Arkansas
farm. Like, yeah, fucking, I would fucking curse out my father every day if you made me live on a farm in Arkansas.
Yeah, that's, like, the worst version of, like, the wife swap show.
I love that show.
So that's one of the things that I was thinking about this week, that I was like, I really need to bring this to Q and make sure that I'm not crazy, because this thought premise, let alone on two separate movies, was not really computing with me. Granted, I'm willing to like watch the film and be like, yeah, you know, it's light, you know, it's fun.
It's but not, it's hard.
At its heart, it's like, this is child abuse.
It's a horror movie.
It's an absolute horror movie.
I used to watch it when I was younger, the Lindsay Lohan one. I think there was an older one from like the 60s too. And honestly, like, I can say that I watched it a decent amount of times and never picked up on that. Like, I was just like, yeah, Dennis Quaid never sees the one daughter, and the mom never I know the mom was a famous actress too.
I think it was Natasha Richardson. Yes.
R.I.P. Yeah. That was Liam Neeson.
It was definitely her. Yep.
Yeah. R.I.P. Yeah. And like she just never saw her other kid. Like, it's just so weird.
And they were fucking fine with it too.
And they just all end up at the same summer camp.
And they don't like each other.
And yeah, too. And of course. But like, they have you never looked in a fucking mirror? Like, yeah, you're the only redhead kid with freckles here. Like,
yeah. This is me, except it's saying, hello, governor.
Hello, governor.
And nobody else picked up on it either. No, there was no camp counselor.
Jolly like, good time, yeah.
These two don't like each other. It's like, yeah, but they're the same fucking person.
That's so funny.
I think whoever wrote that film should be brought up on war crimes.
This is worse than the movie Sallow.
Hang on. Parent Trap. Let's get to the bottom of this shit. Nancy Myers.
Oh, that makes sense.
Put your hands behind your back. The police will be waiting for you outside.
Hands above your head. Don't move.
Stop resisting. Well, I'm glad that we were able to go down like the memory lane of our childhood and completely destroy that.
You blew my mind. Well, I will say, you blew my mind on that.
That's how we operate up in here. This is a show where we're thinking about things differently. Speaking of thinking about things differently.
We do our own research.
Yeah. Ronnie D is expected to run for president of the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
Little bit of a quirk to his campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear that Ronnie D is going to announce for his presidential candidacy with one Elon Musk being there?
Yeah, the same Elon Musk who says that politics on Twitter need to be, and it's going to be on Twitter apparently. The same person who said that the politics need to be neutral on Twitter is going to allow a Republican candidate for president to literally have his announcement on there. It's not like he's doing some for somebody else either. Pretty funny. Just another example of Elon Musk being Elon Musk. This is going to go down, Tom. I'm predicting this right now. Did you see his merch that he put out?
The Ronnie D merch?
The hat that he put out?
The Make America Florida hat?
And the F in Florida is a literal thing of Florida on like a map. I'm predicting this now. He's not going to survive until he will be out before the first primary.
I mean, we've been talking about this for months, right? Because we anticipated mm-hmm. that Ronnie D was going to run for president.
Right.
And, you know, we were a little concerned when Trump came out and, you know, the jabs on Ron DeSantis were not really landing that well. But I think it was you who was confident saying, like, this is just Trump warming up. Like, he's not really in fighting shape yet. Like, this is him working out his material. And now all of a sudden, like, we didn't think Meatball Ron was actually going to land, but very much the same way, like how a meatball actually cooks, like it gets slow. Better. Like, yeah, it gets better. Like, you put it in the, you take you it out of the grilling oven
and you put it in the sauce. And
it yeah. Just, you take it out of the oven and it doesn't have any sauce on it. And it's fine, but then you put it in sauce and you let it cook with the sauce, or like, you know, you're done, you put it in the fridge and you take it back out and you warm it back up. I'm like, that's a good fucking meatball right there. Meatball Ron lands so hard right
now. And what's funny is that he basically, Trump denounced Meatball Ron. He said, I didn't come up with Meatball Ron. And he goes, I would never say something like that. But I will say that actually Ron DeSanctimonious grew on me even more.
Yeah.
And like, because like, when you realize like, oh, he is pretty sanctimonious. Like, so it's kind of perfect. And it like, it didn't hit at first, but like, it's grown on me really, really well. I love Ron DeSanctimonious. But also I don't know if it's real. I hope it is. Maybe you can fact check it for me real quick. Did he accuse Ron DeSantis of being 5'7" the other day? Like, oh, big Ron DeSantis. He's 5'7". Cause if he did, destroyed him. And like, the stature thing's going to play into that.
Yes.
Because Trump is like 6'3". Like, I'm telling you, this is like, it's WWE when we're talking about Republican politics at this point.
So I might have to filter through all of these headlines. Like, Trump suggests DeSantis was grooming high school girls. Trump is attacking DeSantis on policy amid flurry of speculation.
I love this independent article. Ron DeSantis' interview with Piers Morgan has left the internet with one burning question. How tall is he?
Yeah. I mean, also, too, like, does he eat pudding with his fingers?
Puny Ron DeSantis. If he is 5'7", Puny Ron DeSantis has to be his new nickname. Tiny Ron DeSantis.
I think that's the only way to really go at this point. Have you seen any of, like, the press stuff for DeSantis, too? Like, have you sat there with, like, a critical eye and was like, would I be willing to let this person be the president of my country?
So you saw that thing I sent you, right? Where he's going into the restaurant. He's like, smells great in here. Like, number one.
Looks busy.
The maniacal laugh is insane. He looks like he is on the verge of having a meltdown every single second of the day.
Yes.
And the one guy walks up to him and he looks like, like, he's got that face on, and the guy goes, hi, my name is Tim whatever, Tim fucking idiot. And he goes, okay. Like, he just says okay, and doesn't, like, actually, like, say, like, oh, nice to meet you, Tim. Or, like, oh, what do you do, Tim? What's your job? He just goes, okay.
You, like, see, that stuff,
no, just charisma.
That stuff just does not come easy for him. No. And the thing about Trump is, like, you know, he doesn't give a shit about the people that he's hanging out with, but he definitely is able to ham it up. Like, for a guy who's worth so much money, he's actually, like, pretty
man of the people.
Dude, he's a huge musical guy too. Yeah. Which is also really fucking weird. I know,
it's so weird. Dude, remember when he went to what city did he go to? With the train accident.
Youngstown.
Youngstown. Was it Youngstown?
No, it was close to there though.
Okay. So when he went there in Ohio after the train accident, the train derailment, like, and remember when he went to McDonald's and he was like, you know, I know the menu better than you. Like, he was fucking in his element. He is best when he doesn't have to debate, or like if he's going against other Republicans and he can just shit on them.
Yeah.
He's best when he's hamming it up with the people, man. Like, that's what he does well.
You see, that's the thing, is like, Trump doesn't put himself in situations where he's standing behind a grill or anything like that.
Yep.
He's like in and out, pointing at people, handshakes, you know, crooked Hillary, does his like thing, pulls up the carpet and bounces. But the stuff that DeSantis is getting into is like, you don't look like you're enjoying yourself. You don't look like you're good at this. And it's obvious to everybody that, I want to go back to that when he's walking into the restaurant. First and foremost, it definitely was staged because he was talking to like one of his aides right before he walked in. And then he looks at like the far end of the restaurant. He's like, smells good in here. Waves, says like one or two other things. And then, okay, cool. And then this is the box that has been checked that I have to do to look like a person.
He's in just New Hampshire, like
fucking plank of wood.
You know what's funny? I can't remember who said it, but somebody did make a point that he would actually be tougher out for Biden 2024 than Trump would be. And it's actually an interesting point. I don't think he would garner the total numbers that Trump would, but in areas like Arizona and Georgia and like areas like that, he would shave off some of the suburbs, because the Democrats have gained a lot of people in the suburbs who are really turned off from Trump, especially with the January 6th stuff. Like the suburbanites who are like kind of like white Republican voters have kind of in flock kind of moved away from them. And I think a lot of the, like, you're transing the kids and like a lot of that stuff, the anti-gay sentiment, like that has kind of started pulling a lot of those people away from Republicans. They're economy voters and they will definitely vote for an economy person. I think they'd be willing to hold their nose for somebody like DeSantis, despite all his stuff, his rhetoric and stuff. Because like, it's like, yeah, look at how good Florida is doing, quote unquote. But like, I think what it misjudges is that I don't think he'd do well in Rust Belt areas. Like, they're big on authenticity and like fucking hate Biden, love Biden. I don't give a shit. He's, if anything, he's authentic.
Yeah.
He's the Jack guy, you know, like people know, like he's Joe who rode the train. Like, people react to that. And Trump is authentic. Like, yeah. Trump is, if anything, he's authentic and like he speaks his mind and like he does speak his mind. It's not good, but he does speak his mind. So I think a guy like DeSantis, who is all just like, this is an act, like hiding his rage and hiding his like craziness. I don't think he would do well in the Rust Belt. And like, if the Republicans can't cut into Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, that like that blue wall there, they're not going to win.
Yeah, I'd agree with you in that. And I think that Biden is also the guy that went to a Dairy Queen, bought a Blizzard and turned it upside down and got a picture of that. Like, that is like peak, like 15-year-old us. Like, oh, let's get this fucking Blizzard and see if it spills on the floor. And it doesn't. People love that shit.
He loves ice cream, Jack.
He loves ice cream. You know, he loves the, you know, walking back into his helicopter from the helicopter to the White House yesterday, solely focused on his dog that was on the balcony. Like,
I haven't been able, although he's losing it though.
Because yeah, he's not there anymore.
I saw a video of him saying that his son died in Iraq. And I'm like, didn't he have cancer?
Yeah. Well, I think I understand what he was implying, that what he, his son died of cancer that was induced by his time in Iraq. Granted, okay. I don't, understanding the context of that, I can make that connection, but
right.
It's still not a good look for him. But I want to go back to what you were saying earlier about like Ronnie D. You're right. You're 100% right. Like, the longer he is like a bag of oranges, the longer it sits out, the worse it's going to get for him. And
he's been protected by Florida press too.
He's been protected by Florida press. He's been protected by a supermajority in the legislature. Yeah. Like, they basically push through whatever he wants.
Absolutely.
But you're not going to be able to do that everywhere else. And I think the problem that he has is a lot of his policies are so unpopular in other parts of the country. Yeah. Like, typically when you have like a national election, like, you know, when you run for your Republican side or the Democratic side, you lean towards those. But once you get into the general things, you kind of have to be central on to show like you're the great compromiser. I don't see where his compromising is, because he's essentially, it's different than being like a senator, right? Or like a House of Representatives elected official, where, you know, you're one of like a number of people that have voted for something.
You have to like talk to people and make stuff happen.
But when you're the governor, you're the one who's signing all of that shit away and like
putting. You're the president of Florida.
Right. So you have to explain like, why would you do this anti-trans bill law in Florida and then not in the rest of the United States? And you got to toe that line of like, I'm probably not going to win New York, but I do need to win a place like Pennsylvania or Virginia where they can be toss-ups. But he's just so unpopular. And I will also say too, like, the one thing that everyone says, like, he's a jobs guy or he's a business guy. Like, as of right now, the only thing that's happened in Florida for the last year and a half is him fighting with a major corporation.
That, by the way, that employs like tens of thousands of jobs in Florida.
A lot of fucking people in Florida, and brings billions of dollars into the state. And that, whether it was, you know, whether it was they chose not to open that new facility in Florida, or it just was not in the cards for them financially, I don't think Disney is like in complete dire financial straits.
No.
But you do have to say, like, I imagine that it was an easier decision to say, let's axe this project in Florida because DeSantis is a fucking nutcase.
Yeah. I would lean more that they are probably unsure of Florida long term more than it is, because like the demographic is changing there. Because like, again, like, credit to Ron DeSantis, he definitely built Florida in his own image. I mean, he won Miami-Dade. Like, that's not something I would like go like, if you're interested in like electoral politics stuff, look at what Hillary Clinton won Miami-Dade by in 2016, and then look what Biden won Miami-Dade by in 2020. The margin is insane. Like, Hillary Clinton did very well in Miami, and that's why I think Florida was more competitive for her in 2016. Biden barely won Miami-Dade, and that was like a moment in which the middle of the night I was like, this could go very poorly for Biden against Trump, like, because like, he made bigger gains in Florida, and then it seems like the virus has the anti-woke mind virus has kind of just really been centraled in two states, Texas and Florida. Like, that was like 2022. Like, I remember the night of the midterms, I was like, if these Florida returns are representative of the rest of the country, we're fucked. Mm-hmm. And then it turned out, nope, just Texas and just Florida, you know?
But I mean, I think that's the problem, though, is that Florida, DeSantis and his crew represent like the terminally online population of the right, where Christopher Rufo, who's a board of trustee at a college now in Florida.
He's the guy who kind of brokers all of this like anti-trans stuff, and like he makes the slogans. I think what was the one he was like really famous for?
I don't remember specifically, but he's also
the stuff in schools. What do they call it? They were learning about like slavery and all that.
Oh yeah. Ultimately, like the book banning from the libraries and stuff like that. That's a lot of what that policy is. But Rufo was also one that kind of shaped policy nationally. And that's why the RNC puts so much energy and emphasis into like, we need to push back against like wokeism and like
critical race theory
and trans rights and stuff like that.
That was it.
I mean, they hinged a lot of all of their campaigns on that language, and it didn't land for a lot of people. And if you're trying to do that at a national election level, I don't know how much that's going to work, because ultimately, like, it's not nearly as big of an issue as DeSantis wants to make it out to be. The one thing I'll say too is Trump is also like not, or DeSantis is also not polling well nationally either. Like, he's at 21% favorable compared to 19% by RFK Jr. So I'm not really sure how much he's already starting behind. Right. Like, and those numbers were very, very different in February.
Bad. Yeah.
Granted, he was still behind Trump. He was like,
that's before Trump went after him.
Yeah.
So and he was unscathed. Now imagine if other people start going after him, if they're going to bury him.
I feel like he is ultimately like, the longer he's out in public and the more he has to campaign around like normal human beings, or even if he gets into a debate stage, because if he has to debate other Republicans, they're going to push back on a lot of the things that he's doing and saying, hopefully. And if you watch any of his press conferences, he just shuts down reporters and yells at them. You're not going to be able to do that at a national level.
Yeah. And it's funny because I'm looking for it now. I remember I saw a poll a while back. There was a poll that essentially found, that trans issues were about 5% on, like, so like when people like what's your biggest issue or like what are the things you're most concerned about, like it was 5% in support and in opposition.
Mm-hmm.
So like take into account that maybe 3% of it is support, like 2% of it is opposition. When you make trans issues your number one thing, when like it seems like they've been pretty clear that the electorate's like, make it the economy. Republicans do well when they run on the economy, and they're still running on they're transing your kids and like these gay people are scary
or abortion AIDS. And stuff like that. Like,
right?
They're. It's interesting that he complains and the right complains so much about how the left focuses only on social issues and doesn't actually do anything, when in reality, that's what the last, what, two election cycles have been focused on by the Republicans is social issues.
Communism,
socialism, which, by the way, has been here a lot longer than like the last like 5 years. So, I mean, when you have Mike Pence saying that the Disney dispute between DeSantis and the mouse is beyond the scope of what I, as a conservative, limited government Republican, would be prepared to do. If Mike Pence is like, "Nah, you crazy.
You crazy for this one." Yeah, it's funny because it's like, it doesn't, you are really just hurting yourself and your constituency, because he could have just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, he doesn't have to keep sparking this fire, right? Like the logs were going out, right? And like, what was Disney's crime? Do you even remember, like, do you remember the origin of this?
They said they didn't like, or they didn't agree.
Vaguely said, like, they didn't even mention him. It was when the Don't Say Gay bill was coming out. They lukewarmly said, like, here at Disney we love everybody, and he
yeah
was
we're
like,
inclusive to all people.
It's like, I'm gonna fucking kill you, like, how dare you. And like,
and
that's
Disney
what
also
this.
Gave money to like other Republican
yes.
candidates.
Him, they gave money yeah. to him, bro.
Cause,
like,
because that's how corporations there. Work. They give money to fucking everybody in the event that that person wins.
All you have to do is just say, "Well, I disagree with Disney on this." Next question, I'm going to sign this bill now, and like that's how like that's the one good thing about Trump is like he is has an ability to kind of like. Have his attack dogs go after you, but he doesn't really have to do it after a while. There are some people that he doesn't even waste his time with. And like for Ron DeSantis, he could have had his lackeys go after Disney, but he could kind of stay away from it because you waste your own fucking time doing this.
Yeah.
And like he can, I think he's like his term limit runs out in like what, 2026?
Well, he's actually trying to get the Florida legislature to allow him.
It will happen.
To allow him to remain governor while he runs for president.
That is fucking goddamn it.
And they'll let him do it. You're right. They'll let him do it because that state basically will, like, they'll do whatever he asks.
Yeah, I'm going to put this out here for the Democrats. They dumped a lot of money, I think like $70 million into like Val Demings and Charlie Crist and all them. If I see a single dollar go to a single Florida politician, other than like maybe some House races that they could win that are like kind of favorable towards them, it's a gross, gross misjudgment, because like you've already gotten a good idea of where Florida is. I don't want to see money going into Texas again, unless it's like pretty much like things that you know you can win, house races that you know you can win, because like honestly it's fucking crazy. I think about Wisconsin, right? Like we saw the governor get reelected.
Mm-hmm.
We saw you know, the Supreme Court case go well there, the Supreme Court election go well there for the Democrats. And I look at Mandela Barnes coming within like that much of getting Ron Johnson out of the Senate. And if they had just given him what they gave Val Demings, that puts him over the finish line.
Yeah. Because Demings got smoked, right?
Destroyed. Yeah. Not even close. Not even close against Rubio, who's arguably not a strong opponent.
Yeah. And I mean, they said like, well, she's a retired cop. Like, oh, it's going to work. It's like, great. Well, if you know you're going to lose, like at least run somebody who's like sparks.
Who did, like, who's Charles Booker? Like, you know, going against Rand Paul, right? Like,
yeah,
I like that. Like, okay, he got trounced, right? Yeah, it's going to happen. But at least you tried with somebody that was like an actual leftist, you know, or like had that mindset. Val Demings is a fucking pro cop, and like she basically like a moderate Republican. Like,
who, yeah,
like that's not how you win.
And ultimately, like you learn. I know this is gonna like the conservatives that listen, if they're still here, they're gonna troll us for this. But like,
I don't care.
There is actually some things that you learn from losing it, particularly in like a political campaign, where if you're doing it right, you're discovering new pockets of people that have not voted or constituency that you have not engaged. Yep. And you just need to cultivate those for another 2 or 4 years to get them back into the cycle.
Absolutely.
And if you're just like going to the well over and over and over again to these mealy mouth, like Democratic candidates that are like, John, we're going to get you back to where you were 8 years ago. Like, that's not really going to work either. But, and you're running a guy who was a Republican, then a Democrat. Like, so no one's like really like locked in on that guy. Like, run somebody who is at least going to like push back on everybody. I didn't even know that DeSantis was running against somebody. That's how little attention Charlie Crist got.
Yeah, it's crazy to me. And like, honestly, like when I look at the fact that like Charlie Crist got that much money, Charlie Crist is like more boring than white bread. Like, awful. Val Demings, not exciting. Also, they didn't give her like a national stage either. Like, they didn't do anything to hype her up other than give her money and pump to the local media. Like, you have to, like, and like, honestly, like, I'm tired of seeing like the Stacey Abrams too. Like, stop running these retreads over and over again. And
stop like, running people who don't win.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, I mean, fucking Mandela Barnes was like a lieutenant governor of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people knew him in Wisconsin, and like, he barely lost to Ron Johnson. And like, that's another thing, is that the Democrats need to stop highlighting Democrats from New York and California and putting them in leadership positions. Take a look at fucking Minnesota Democrats. Look at Michigan Democrats. Look at Wisconsin Democrats, Pennsylvania Democrats. Start highlighting those people. Start putting them in leadership positions, because they're the ones that get shit done. Fucking Big Gretch, like, yeah, I'm so disappointed she endorsed Biden.
Yeah,
because like I was hoping she was gonna run. Because like,
when does her term run out? 24?
I think so. Yeah. No. She was reelected. She was just reelected. So it would be, is it 2 years for governor?
Her current term ends in 2027. So that lines her up nicely for 28.
She's playing nice right now for 2028. Yeah. I would consider her the pretty odds on favor for 2028 at this point.
I would agree. And I think too, like, she does a lot of stuff that is popular.
I'm a big Gretch fan.
Yeah.
I would love if she's the nominee in 2028, I'm ecstatic, honestly.
Yeah. And she'll be 55 then too. Perfect. So she's right in that window.
Perfect. Yep.
Yeah, I'm down with that.
And honestly, like, Michigan has been fucking killing it with like the ending right to work and all that. Like, it's just, they're on the pulse. I think Minnesota just passed that Lyft bill. Mm-hmm. Didn't they just the Uber bill?
Yep.
That requires a certain amount of pay. Great. Doing good things, man. The Rust Belt, I'm number one. I've already talked about how much I love Minnesota, because like, again, 1984, Reagan wins 49 states, and you would think, oh, he didn't win California, right? No, he did. Oh, he didn't win New York, did he? No, he won New York. Minnesota, the only holdout.
Oh man. Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see. I think the only reason why California and New York always get the leadership positions is because those are automatic locks.
Of course.
So you have Nancy and you have Dianne Feinstein, and then you have Chuck Schumer and then Kirsten Gillibrand. And they have been in power forever because they know they're never going to lose their jobs. So that's why they get those positions.
We didn't even talk about Dianne Feinstein.
I mean, we could talk about two people getting old, LeBron or Diane. We have to choose one.
I just want to touch upon, like, I wanted to talk about LeBron, but Dianne Feinstein, like, there was an interview that she did when she came back to The Hill, mm-hmm. and she wasn't aware that she was gone. I remember hearing rumors years ago that somebody had admitted to, like, she was on medicine for dementia.
Yeah.
And like that was years ago. And like you're now looking at the situation. And I think there's a broader conspiracy to this is because I think Adam Schiff is running for that running for Senate, I believe.
It's a play from I think I know what you're talking about. And if I'm understanding it correctly, it's a play so Adam Schiff will be able to take that Senate seat and keep it from Barbara Lee.
Right. Absolutely. And I believe it because, I mean, like, and Barbara Lee, I mean, is honestly one of the best we have.
Rock star.
Just absolute rock star. And I would love for her to run for that Senate seat. And it feels like they're, like, holding out because, like, I know that if Gavin had an ability to appoint somebody, he's appointing Barbara Lee. Mm-hmm. And I think they're going to try and hold it out so that, like, they Adam Schiff can win or they can pump money, at least pump as much money as they can for him. And that's more of my broad conspiracy theory. But, like, do you think that we need, like, this? There has to be restrictions, right? Like, if you get diagnosed with Alzheimer's and you're actively a member of the House or the Senate or presidency, like, you have to step down. Like, that has to become a rule. Like, I know it sounds crazy, and it might be illegal. I might be saying something that's illegal. But, like, I don't know, man. Like, this is crazy.
I agree with you in the sense that you can't have somebody in a position of authority who doesn't even know if they were there or not. So, I mean, how does this work, right? Like, do they effectively keep that person in their Senate position, but they strip all of their committee positions from right. them? And they're then just in that
figurehead at that point.
Yeah, and then in that case, like, why is that person in that position at all? And I get that Dianne Feinstein has, like, done a ton of shit. She's also done a lot of questionable shit too. So, like, it's not like, yeah, she's, you know, a trailblazer in the same way that also does some pretty shitty things to get to the top as well.
Yep.
So I don't really know what the end play is to keep her there other than the fact that her staff can basically just tell her, like, hey, use your finger and click this button and we're going to vote for this. But, you know, there were court nominees that were getting held up. There were decisions that were supposed to be made that were getting held up because she wasn't there. And it's not like there's a super majority or a healthy majority in the Senate. Like, they need her vote.
Yeah.
Again, I think it's – I don't know why we are continuing to do this legacy protection of folks that should have retired years ago. And California is a place, too. Like, if they ran somebody to fill her spot in an election – a Democrat's going to win it. Like, I don't care how many, like, goons that live inland say, like, oh, I'm going to vote for Larry Elder. Like, no, you're not. Shut up. No, you're not.
There's not going to be a Republican senator from California.
Yeah.
There isn't.
So and Alex Padilla is 50 years old. Like, he got in right after Kamala was selected to be VP. Yep. So he's in there. Younger guy. He's 50, which, like, in Senate terms is, like, being 19.
You're 21 all over again. Yeah.
Yeah. So... And I mean, I think there is a good bench of people that California can go to select that person as a senator.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, honestly, like, I know Barbara Lee's a bit older, but, like, if you're going to have somebody who's, like, a little bit older, but, like, a veteran, Barbara Lee's the one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, for anybody who needs context, there was one person who voted against the Iraq War authorization, and it was Barbara Lee. So, like,
she's the only person that was right.
Literally the only person who voted against the authorization of war in Iraq and Afghanistan. So, there you go.
All right, let's get to another old person in California.
LeBron James. Yeah, so Tom, the Lakers were eliminated last night. 4-0, wasn't even close. The Nuggets, it looks like this is going to be pretty decisive finals round. I'm actually pretty interested to see how Nuggets Heat goes. But at this point, LeBron James kind of talking in the way that a person who's going to retire talks. He has already surpassed Kareem at this point. Do you think LeBron retires? And if he does, should he? Right off the bat, what do you think? Does he retire?
I don't think he retires, but I do think that this offseason is going to be really indicative of whether he plays longer or plays for just one more year.
Yeah.
Because they have some pieces there that they need to re-sign. D'Angelo Russell's a free agent. Austin Reeves is a free agent. Rui's a free agent. Oof. And there's a lot of big pieces there. I think
that's not enough.
Yeah. I think it's hard to say, but I think he's probably got one good year left in him. But they do need to find a way for him to play fewer minutes, because I think he played like every minute of that game last night. Like, you can't do that when you're 35 and you've been playing professionally since you were 18.
Yeah.
I think it was aspirational to say like he wanted to wait for Bronny to get in.
Yeah.
He's 38, again,
by the way.
Oh, he's 38?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's got 1 year left. That's it. 1 year. And I would also say too, like, what's the, at this point in LeBron's career, and I know the Jordan people are going to lose their shit, what's the value added for him winning another championship?
So he's, how many, he's got four, right?
Yes.
I think that gets him to Kobe. Kobe's got five, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think there are merits in how many championships you win. I think the Jordan stuff has been over for a long time, because like Jordan never lost the final series. Like, but like, it's impressive also in the same mindset though, that like, although LeBron only with the four rings doesn't kind of match up, the fact that he's been to like 10 finals is more than Jordan. So like, even though he lost them, like there's still like an impressive mark to them. I don't think he has anything to prove at this point. Kareem's record has been shattered, a thing that I don't think anybody really ever thought was going to happen. There's no one that I can look at that's going to surpass LeBron, at least as of right now. They keep talking about this Victor Wembanyama kid from France. Like, he's going to be a bust. I can already tell.
You're 7'4" and you weigh 130 pounds. You're going to get.
I watched him get destroyed on a defensive end. I don't see it. So I don't think he has anything to prove, but I don't think he retires this year. I don't think he necessarily, this is his last year, but I do think he should do what Jeter did, which is kind of call your own shot. Like, don't retire now. Cause like, number one, there's no reason to retire now. But the problem also is I don't see a way that the Lakers become a championship team in the next year or two. So I think he's going to, like, if anything, don't go into it with the expectations of like, I got to get my fifth ring. Go into it of like having your final season to lay it all out there. I do agree with you. Less minutes, certainly less minutes, but he should have a farewell season and like, you know, fucking lay it all out there, man. Like, give everything, every little bit that you got left. And like, who knows, weirder things have happened. They do have enough talent on that team, but like, you're right. With re-signing Rui Hachimura and Austin Reeves and, you know, D'Angelo Russell and all those guys, you're not really getting another star.
Yeah.
You know what he should do? He should go to the New York Knicks for 1 year.
Wow.
And win a championship in New York. Because that team with Brunson and Barrett and all those guys got enough talent there. They are really just kind of missing that one central piece. And winning a championship in New York would be the thing. I know it sounds crazy, but like, imagine he goes to the Knicks and they win a championship. He could retire delivering a championship in New York. Would be amazing things for his legacy. So I think the Lakers, they have a million championships. You're not ever going to be the number one guy in LA. But imagine if you went to a team like the Knicks that has not won a title since fucking 1973 and you deliver a championship in Madison Square Garden. You would be a fucking legend.
Yeah, they would not only retire your jersey after like one season, but they would dedicate the court to you.
Yeah. Dude, are you kidding? And like, honestly, like,
Clyde Frazier will give you his entire fucking closet.
And honestly, like, let's be real here for a second. I know we're Knicks homers. I know that. But like, they gave the Heat a pretty good series, and the Celtics are going to get fucking swept in the Eastern Conference Finals. The Knicks were not that far off from being a potential finals team here. And you look at Brunson, you look at Barrett, it's all these really young, talented players. I mean, if you replace Julius Randle with LeBron James, feeling pretty good?
Things can change.
So I'm just saying that, like, I know it's never going to happen, but I'm just saying that if LeBron James wants to go out on, like, if he wants to, like, give it one more shot and, like, do it up big before he retires, that's the fucking move. Or go back to Cleveland. You know,
yeah.
Go with Donovan Mitchell and run it back for Cleveland. But like, fuck it, do it in New York, man. Like, but like, yeah, he's getting close.
Yeah. And so I would love for that to happen. I don't know if the Lakers would just approve just like hey, we're just going to trade you for nothing.
No. I mean, like, the Knicks would have to, like, I mean, obviously Julius Randle would be the piece, right? Because to make the money work and everything. And then it would be draft picks and stuff like that. But it'd have to be realistic. Because he is 38 years old. He's close to retirement. But, like, it would also be kind of an ability for the Lakers to kind of dump next year and then, like, you know, get back and
pray for Bronny.
Knicks have, like, 11 draft picks over the next few years. So, like,
I've never personally remember the Knicks having more than, like, one in 3 years.
So, a lot of lottery tickets that the Knicks have that they could cash in now. For a guy like LeBron James, and like for the Lakers, it's smart to move off of it if you don't think that you can win a championship.
Yeah.
I
mean, I'm looking at the Lakers free agents right now. Lonnie Walker, Malik Beasley's on a team option. Russell, Troy Brown Jr., Schroeder, Wenyen Gabriel, Reeves, Hachimura, Scottie Pippen Jr. So like, two of those people are the ones you want to keep.
By the way, the Knicks are the betting favorites to land LeBron James if he does not stay with the Lakers.
Love that. I do want to point something out though, and I think this LeBron James Los Angeles story would be very, very much different if Anthony Davis was a more consistent player. And I know that all of the LA people are going to lose their shit when I say that, but the fact of the matter is, Anthony Davis is a guy who's a very up and down player at this point in his career.
Overrated.
And okay, he scored 25. He averaged a double double this year, but he also played like 2/3 of the games you're supposed to play.
Yep.
And it seemed like he was also a guy that would go down with like little injuries, and the big ones, like the big falls you thought would be like, oh, that will be serious, were not.
Yeah. He's like, I'll use a Knicks reference here, Mitchell Robinson, in the way that it's like he goes to get a rebound, he comes down and he like kind of rolls his ankle, and then he misses like three games, and then he comes back, he plays two really good games, and you're like, okay, he's back,
he's figuring it out.
He bumps his shoulder with somebody and he's like, ow, and like he misses like three quarters, he comes back, he stubs his toe, he's out for 2 weeks. It's just, by the way, Anthony Davis, games played since he's been a Laker. So we're starting with 2019. 62, 36, 40, and 56.
Yep.
So 2 years he played three quarters of the season, and two seasons he played half the season.
Yeah. And the most games he's played is 75. And he did it twice.
He did play back-to-back, yeah. And that was early in his career. But he was actually pretty consistent. Until his last year in New Orleans. 67, 68, 61, 75, 75, 56. So pretty consistent, like playing, like those are probably rest games, you know, over the season, which mm-hmm. is fine. But he's 30.
Yeah, he's 30, and he's never really grown into kind of like that team captain position nope. either.
He's not a number one.
He definitely didn't have it when he was in New Orleans. And, nope. you know, when you're going into a playoff game thinking like, okay, what kind of Anthony Davis are we going to get today? That's not really a good thing. Like you know, like when you're going into a playoff, you're going to get like a double-double at minimum yeah. from LeBron, and he's going to play every minute and he's going to give all of his energy. But with, you know, there was a cloud that was in LA. So, you know, Davis wasn't really feeling it that game. And I just don't know, like, even if the Lakers were able to sign a couple of those guys, I don't know if the talent pool is enough right now in the free agent market to really put this team in a position where they're actually going to be in contention. And I don't know if they have enough trade value right now to go out and find other people. I think they invested heavily into this year with Vanderbilt, D'Lo, and Mo Bamba coming into the team. This was like, this is make or break. Like next year, we don't know what's going to happen because we can't guarantee that we're going to be able to keep Rui or Reeves because they're restricted free agents. Mo Bamba got hurt immediately when he got to LA. So it would have been really interesting to see what this team would have looked like if all the pieces were there for a couple of years, but I think they're done.
Yeah. Like they keep talking about Dame, and I don't know how they pull that off without gutting pretty much everything.
I think if you wanted Dame, it should have been 3 years ago.
Yeah. And honestly, you know, Dame's over 30 and like hasn't really been the most consistent guy. So like, I don't know if that pushes you above everybody else in the Western Conference at this point.
I keep hearing people want Kyrie, and I still don't see that either.
Number one, Kyrie had a shot to push for the Lakers midseason, and he purposely avoided them to go to the Mavericks, and that was a disaster. By the way, bullshit what happened, that the Mavericks got away with that, and the Knicks should have gotten that pick. Mm-hmm. Bullshit. As far as I'm concerned, it's bullshit. They should have gotten that pick as punishment. They fucking forfeited the game pretty much that they had a chance to go to the playoffs in to avoid that the Knicks would get, because they were scared that they were going to get the 11th pick, which would go to the Knicks. It's top 10 protected. And then guess what? Mark Cuban gets a what? $200,000 fine. He wipes his ass with that money. And now what happens? The lottery happens. They get the 10th pick. And of course they keep the pick. So it's fucking bullshit how this. So by the way, I want to throw this out here. So there was somebody threw out a trade for the Knicks, with LeBron James, and I want to see where you're at with it because I don't really love it. So LeBron James and a 2028 first round draft pick would go to the Knicks. In return, the Lakers would get RJ Barrett, Obi Toppin, Evan Fournier, Jerica Sims, and three 2024 first round picks. Now, I want to point out, I don't hate the picks too much because they would be the Mavericks pick most likely, and like some other pick, and then their pick for 2024, which if you have LeBron James on your team, you know, you're not so really too worried.
So there's three first round picks in 2024.
Right. So nothing past 2024. Right. Okay.
Pretty interesting. You have to think too, like it's as you were saying, it's going to be a competitive team. And unless you're drafting in the top seven, it's going to be goons.
And yeah, exactly. Jericho Sims and Evan Fournier. I don't.
Sure.
Whatever.
Bye.
Sure.
Later. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh no.
And then so it just comes down to RJ Barrett and Obi Toppin. Now I feel like Julius Randle would have to be a part. I guess with Barrett's money, they could technically make that work. It's a question of, because like it really, you're the core tenants, are you willing to give up Barrett and Toppin? And Toppin, I would be more than willing to give up. Barrett, I'm a little sticky on, because at the same time as like he has not been the most consistent and he hasn't lived up to expectations, at the same time it's like, man, you're really giving up two future young guys for a guy who might retire at the end of the year. You know, I still think I'd do that trade though, because you're not giving up major assets long term, you know. And I think Brunson's going to be the engine that makes this move for a bunch of years, and Grimes and Robinson and all those guys that I don't necessarily look at RJ Barrett as an unreplaceable guy.
You know, I was thinking in my head, like, I don't know if I would do that, but I think you've convinced me that I would. And the reason is, like, I agree with you. I don't think I look at RJ Barrett in the same way that you'd look at, like, Michael Redd back in the day. Like, good Monte player. Monte Ellis. Yeah, maybe less crazy. Yeah. But, like, a guy who's going to score 20 points but is not really, like, a
definitive. Eric Bledsoe?
Yeah, like, not really a guy who's going to make or break the team for you. And Obi Toppin, like, I think that would be good to let him go because
yeah,
I don't know where he would live in the LeBron ecosystem specifically. He wouldn't. Like, I don't think he would get the playing time. I don't think he'd get the development. And nope. Ultimately, like, I still don't know if the Knicks know 100% what they have in him because he's been a bench guy. He's been hurt a little bit too. I would let it go, see what happens. I mean, you can sign guys to fill in some of the gaps there. Yeah. I mean, Jericho Sims and Evan Fournier. Evan Fournier is like, I know I'm not going to be back with this team. So I don't think he's like, I don't think he's naive to the fact that he's like going to be an expiring contract and get the fuck out.
Yeah. No.
So, I mean,
it's tough. If you replace Barrett with Randall, I'd do that in a second. But it's
yeah, like, but I think it takes the pain away if it says like, yeah, we're letting these two guys go. They have a lot of promise for LeBron. In a league where guys with a lot of promise are very often traded for superstars, and the guys with promise don't nearly match up to the level of success that the other ones. I mean, even just look, this is a perfect example. Look at the New Orleans trade to get Anthony Davis. Like, the Lakers traded Brandon Ingram, one of the Ball children, and a bunch of other pieces. Brandon Ingram's the only guy that's still on that team, and the Ball child is like on his fifth ACL surgery. So,
yeah.
And Brandon Ingram has been in witness protection in New Orleans for the last 5 years. So,
again, another guy that we thought could be, he was on the come up too.
Who was supposed to be like a Kevin Durant 2.0. And
Kevin Durant said it himself that he reminded him of himself when he was younger. So, like, it's clear that like potential is a hell of a drug. But it sometimes doesn't shape out. What do we think? Is RJ Barrett going to have an Andrew Wiggins like ascension eventually? Right. Like, cause I think Andrew Wiggins is probably the closest comparison I can think of for a person like RJ Barrett. Canadian player came in with a lot of hype and then comes to the NBA scoring. Like, Andrew Wiggins was putting up like 18, 19 points a game early in his career. But it just like, something's missing. Like, there's something missing there. And it's like, it's just not. And then all of a sudden, Barrett, like, he sucked towards the end of the year, goes into the playoffs. He plays like a man on fire. He looks like he's playing at a great defensive level and he's crushing it offensively. So it's like he teases you and then he'll come out next season and like he'll start with 9 points a game. You know, it's like, and he'll do that for 20 games and he'll get hot. Like, is he going to be this streaky player the rest of his career? Or is he finally going to get to the point where he finds that next level to where if you give me LeBron on this Knicks team with Brunson and Quickly and Robinson and even Randall in this scenario, I feel like that could be a team that comes out of the East.
Yeah. I'd be curious to see what that team would look like with Julius Randle and LeBron, because I think I think if anybody is going to be able to manage Julius Randle's, like,
it's LeBron.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As a guy who wasn't Julius Randle one of the guys that was traded for Anthony Davis?
I believe so.
So
yeah, to New Orleans. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you go back and look at that as well. And I think that I don't think it's going to happen, but I think the front office for New York should at least go out there and say, like, hey, this is what we're willing to offer you. Let us know what you think. Have a conversation with LeBron and his team. Like, if they still want to be, if he's having this thought of like how I want to end my career,
I just think about
it. You want to set him up and be in a position to be successful, right? Like, the last thing you want to do is see like a superstar player in any league go out and be on a team that's like struggling.
I mean, you would have a starting five for the Knicks with Brunson, Grimes, LeBron, Julius, and then Robinson at the five. Mm-hmm. with Quickly coming off the bench, and you know, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it would be a compelling argument to make, and I think what they would just need to do is find like a pretty solid like number two small forward or stretch power forward that can at least take a lot of the time.
The Knicks would become the primary destination for like skilled guys that want to come win a championship, you know, mm-hmm. or like with a shot to, because LeBron would be there. I just look at LeBron and I'm like, he has been anything. He just like, he's made, and it's a credit to him. He has made the miraculous look kind of like normal and kind of boring. Like, he's an incredible guy. Like, the fact that he broke Kareem's record is incredible. But it's like, he's just always been kind of like an exciting, boring guy. So his career has been so weird with like going to Miami with, you know, Dwayne Wade and Bosch, and then going back home and winning a championship, and then like going to LA. And it's just like, okay. You know, like going to the Lakers felt like a cop out to me, the same way going to the Heat felt like a cop out for me. He's run from challenges to where I felt like, if we're going to compare Jordan, like Jordan looked like he embraced challenges. And I would like, you know, I remember when the decision happened, the Knicks were a team that I think a lot of people were kind of connecting to for a long time, and it just never happened. I think this would be a kind of a cool way for him to kind of go out.
I'd agree. I think it'd be fun. It would make definitely
fucking so much fun.
It would make like November basketball actually fun to watch.
Man, imagine going to the Garden with LeBron in a Knicks uniform. Like,
I'd like to point out we wouldn't be able to afford it.
But... No. I'd have to get I'd have to take out a loan just to sit in the fucking.
You'd have to come to Charlotte with this pathetic team to be able to see them.
True.
Yeah. So. I mean, I think the last thing I'll say is LeBron, the parking is not nearly as bad in New York City as you think.
True. He loves playing at the Garden. He said it. Everyone loves playing at the Garden.
You know what's better than Jordan's playing at the Garden twice a year? Playing there, you know, 41 times a year.
Yeah. It was Jordan's favorite place to play, too.
Oh. Oh, what a coincidence.
Everyone loves playing at Madison Square Garden, yet no one wants to be a Knick.
Well, James Dolan is the reason why no one's.
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
So, just transitioning to something a little bit more of a serious conversation. Q, I don't know if you had a chance to read the article that I had sent to you, but apparently there is a large scale concern about loneliness in the country right now. And a number of areas that people are concerned about is like, how does loneliness impact older people? The impact of loneliness on mental health and what that means for them, including depression, anxiety, and other mental health conditions. So given all of that, like, I wanted to frame this around, like, we are of the same age right now. And I think people of our age, the older I've gotten, the more I've seen folks of our age like share, like, it's harder to make friends, it's harder to keep friends, and ultimately you're spending a lot of time by yourself. So hearing about this topic, like, what kind of things come to mind for you in terms of like people of our age, and how have they had that conversation with you about loneliness? And in some cases, have you had to experience that as well?
Yeah, I actually haven't that much, only because I think I'm one of the rare people like who kind of values my alone time. But also, I don't need physical stimulation. Like, I don't need physical like stimulation. Like, I can talk to my friend on the phone, and it like feel like we do, you know. Tom, you moved away from New York. You're in North Carolina. We do this kind of also to stay in touch and, like, you know, have fun together. It's kind of that way of doing it. So I've never really had that aspect of it. COVID was a little tougher, but like, I haven't had that issue. The making friends part I get, because although not personally suffering from it, I can understand that, like, by this age, so like I'm 35, you're 35, like, we're, you feel like you should have your core group of friends, and it's like, where do you go to make friends
yeah.
at this point? Because it's like, you can't just make buddies. Like, when you're in your 20s, like, you could run into a dude at the bar, do a couple shots together, and then, like, you're bros, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it's easy. At this age, it's much harder because, like, you know, where do you go to meet people? Like, you're not going to school. It's a lot of times it's at work, right? But, like, work friends, there's a balance, because a lot of times you don't want to, like, show too much, because, like, you don't know how people, like, you know, if you're doing stuff outside of work that may not be necessarily, like, company friendly, you have to balance, like, is this person going to report me? I don't really know this person yet, to where it's, like, not with really with, like, long-standing relationships where there's no ties like that. So it is harder. And, yeah, I think COVID kind of really made it worse, because there was a big stretch of time where, you know, you're isolated, right? And if you already are kind of lacking on friendships to begin with, it's even harder. But I don't know how you fix it. The only way that I think you can fix it is, honestly, like, I think a lot of it might be, like, economic related. I think people are working so much just to be able to survive that it cuts down on your ability to even, like, do stuff socially, you know?
Yeah. And I think the part that you mentioned about, like, getting older and making friends definitely resonates with me. And it resonates with me in a different way, in the sense that since I moved away from Long Island in 2013, I've lived in Pennsylvania, Virginia, two different places in North Carolina now. And every time that you move, you have to find a new friend group.
Yeah.
And I worked in an industry where it was very, like, you work at a place for 1 or 2 years and you go somewhere else. So your friends are constantly moving around, and it's hard to make friends. And then also there are people that you work with too. So going back to your point as well, the other part is too, like, how often do you want to meet with people that you work with, and the only thing you have in common is work? And that ultimately makes it more and more challenging. And honestly, it was refreshing when I switched jobs and I no longer work in higher education, where I'm not necessarily involved in what's going on the college campus, and we have to find other things to talk about. But I definitely see like the concern here, because I will say, like, there are times where I'm like, man, I wish I had some friends around here. Or I remember when my wife and I lived in Virginia, I was like, we don't know anybody. Like, we're the only two people that we know. And that's great, but you do need to have other people to connect with.
For sure.
And I think a lot of this also too, and I don't mean to make social media a scapegoat for everything, but I feel like the more opportunities we have to connect with people digitally, the less willing we are to actually go somewhere and meet them. And so many people spend all of their time online in these communities that they've built, like Reddit or Truth Social or Instagram. We watch people do things instead of actually experiencing them for ourselves. So we get that quick hit of dopamine, like, ooh, wow, this influencer is in, like, Tulum, but I don't have any friends, and I'm not willing to call any of them.
I think it's not even just, there are people with friends that still, I think, probably go through that too, is because it's the FOMO, right? It's like, and it's engineered that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Fyre Festival documentary on Netflix actually kind of did a nice job of kind of talking about that. The one dude was like, I was posting stuff on Instagram, like, I was having the best time ever. And it was like, I was miserable because of what was going on. And we were, like, under siege every day and everything like that. So I think that's the key, is that there are a lot of people who are, like, those people are lonely too, who are posting, like, you know, they're, like, not like they're living their best life every single day. It's like there are aspects of their day that are very slanted. So I think we need to be more honest with ourselves and stop pretending like everything's all right all the time. It's okay to not be all right, but also I think there's got to be less reliance on, like, posting your feelings on social media. Like, there are some people who don't have anybody, and that is where it gets tricky, because, like, even if you don't necessarily have friends, if you have family, you know, that helps. But, like, the people who just post their feelings on social media is, like, it's kind of scary to see, because it's like, I don't know. People need an outlet, but again, like, I speak to, like, economically, like if you don't have the ability or the wherewithal to take time off or go travel or, you know, whatever, just doing things that you like, you, if you feel like you're just waking up to work and then go home, sleep, wake up, work, and that cycle, it's only going to add to the feeling of loneliness.
Yeah. If there's no outlet for you to like
100%
celebrate the work that you put in, it just feels mm-hmm. like mindless.
You're just surviving. And like survival is good, right? It's essential, but it's not, it doesn't breed happiness. It just keeps you in a constant state of like alertness. And, you know, it's no way to live. That's for sure.
Yeah. I'm wondering though, like how much of the responsibility is also on our communities to try to bring people together? Because I know that like the rise of suburbs has really made this really tricky, but I feel like there is there's a lot of potential for like social clubs to come back or just like volunteer organizations, things like that, ways that people can get involved back. And I feel like if I go on to like my town's website, I'm sure I could find something, but there's not a whole lot of stuff that's like, hey, meet up with people that are your age and just have a conversation. It's like, do you want to like collect stamps? It's very like niche shit. And yeah, good on them. Like the niche shit people have it together because they know like nobody else is going to want to look for like trading cards from like NASCAR. So I need to find those people. But for like normies, it's a lot harder. And I'm wondering like how much of a responsibility does like the surrounding organizations, like community centers, how much of them are should be responsible for trying to at least get information out there to people?
I think they do. And I think it's hard because some people are introverts and don't, you know, they want to put themselves out there, but they don't have the capabilities mentally or physically to do it. And that's where it gets tough because like, I'm kind of an introvert in some ways that like, I like going out, but I also like not going out. So it's like, I don't know. It's really tough. I think the community, like, yeah, we should have more of that stuff, but also I think for some people, there are some people where I'm not sure if there is a good answer because like for some, I think the isolated feeling can cause you to isolate more. It's like picking at a scab, right? Like it only makes it worse. And, I don't know if there's a good answer because I think we're too online at this point. I don't like, how can you stop social media at this point? It's become too big to the point where we can't even like really control it. So what are the mechanisms that we can engineer at this point? Because every attempt at making social media more geared towards like actual socialness has only made it worse.
All news channels have to be turned off by 5 o'clock.
I mean, honestly though, like back in the day, you know, they used to have like the nightly news and then like, that's it. Like,
yep, we're done, folks. Thanks. Yeah.
But I think it's social unrest. I think, all of this stuff has kind of led towards people feeling more isolated and like COVID was only, but like, this is what's scary about it though, is that it's like COVID was, and I mean, honestly, I think it's still around and we just learned to like ignore it. But like, if something bigger was to happen, like, I don't think we're mentally or physically prepared for it.
No, I mean, we're social animals and we're like, there are introverts out there. Yes. But like, at the end of the day, humans are designed to work in communities. And I think COVID was actually something that showed like, it was no longer self-selecting yourself out of engaging with others. It was, you are now not able to interact with people in person. But the number of like online communities and video game like groups that started because of COVID was actually pretty inspiring. It seems like now though, things have really shifted. And I was half joking about like the news having to turn off at like 5 o'clock every day. Because one of the things that I've noticed, particularly with older people, is like people who are in their like 70s, 80s, and 90s, they'll just sit in front of the TV and just like connect their brain right to like the cable box, and it's always news.
You can argue QAnon is birthed by 24-hour news cycle and increased loneliness and like not having friends.
Yeah. And I that's honestly the generation that I'm most fearful for, because they don't, you know, senior citizens are probably one of the more neglected populations out there, because
for sure
people get really nervous when you start talking about getting old, because that means you're going to die. Mm-hmm. But if you have all of this time on your hands and you're retired and you don't have anything to look forward to, you're just going to sit and watch TV, and the news is just doom scrolling live. Yeah. And everything on there is terrible. I mean, even the news in the morning when I'm at the gym, it's on. It's like, this was a hit and run accident. This was a shooting that happened. This was a fire that happened. Like, is there anything good that happens? And they cram that shit in at the end. They're like, oh, by the way, this dog was found after it shot 15
people. The dog shot 50 people.
Yeah. But it's okay. The dog found their owner. But like, I would be super curious if the news shifted away from like, because frankly, like,
we don't need to know of every major atrocity, right? If it like, doesn't affect, maybe cut down on some of that.
Yeah. Does an accident on 495 and Long Island Expressway at 2 o'clock in the morning, do you need to know that? Like, is that something that's going to be one that's going to like make or break your day? Probably not. I think what you should know. Oh, there he is. I think what you should know, though, is these are the events and activities that are happening in your community. These are the opportunities that you have. These are the good things that have happened in the community. Like, I wonder if we just like reverse engineer the bad shit out of the system and push better information to people, they'll be better off. Now, I could also see like the contrarians out there saying, oh, you're only giving the good information, you're hiding all the bad stuff. But yeah. I mean, we've had the news the way it is for so long at this point. It's just shitty.
True.
We are being joined right now by one of the lead negotiators in the debt crisis ceiling. Gatto, great to hear from you. How are the pepperoncinis? You're on mute.
My name's Hot Tom. Call me by my right name.
How are you, sir?
I'm all right. How are you guys doing?
It's not good. Some kind of social club where you can just dip in and out of, Gatto.
Really?
No, it is. This fucking guy. He just looks defeated.
Are you guys recording? Oh, shit.
Yes.
I'm exhausted. Jesus
Christ.
All right. Well, I think that does it for us. So what we're going to do is we're going to go to Assholes of the Week and Picks of the Week. My asshole of the week is going to be Gatto.
My asshole of the week will also be Gatto.
Oh, how you like that?
And asshole. I am also my asshole of the week.
Yes.
Good. I love that for you. Q, why don't we start with you here?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Quality King Distributors out of Brentwood, New York, on Long Island. They were actually fined $100,000 this week by Letitia James, the Attorney General of New York, for price gouging during COVID. We were just talking about COVID and, you know, the feelings of loneliness and things like that that come out of that. But also one of the worst things that came out of COVID was people taking the opportunity to hoard cleaning products and things of that nature, and then charging an astronomical price for them during a time in which people were clearly struggling and scared and everything like that. So glad to see that New York actually doing something about it. Only the people that complained about it are getting relief checks. I guess that's how it has to work. But yeah, at this point, I don't know what's going to happen next time, but if you like, there needs to be some kind of mechanism that stops people from doing this, because it's an insane thing.
It kind of goes back to kind of that, that greedflation, right? Where
greedflation. Yep.
That's been another topic too, especially during COVID, where these companies are saying like, well, we can actually charge more for this and say that there are these like supply chain issues and just we don't have to explain any of it. We could just
while making it. Record profits.
Yeah.
Like our costs have gone up, but we're still making record profits. So it's like,
I don't know if that's weird, but okay. Gatto, I know that you've been negotiating our debt ceiling, but who is your asshole of the week?
I absolutely do not have one.
Okay,
I just
so came it's gonna here. Stay, this, it's going to stay you. Okay.
This check-in was sponsored by BetterHelp. So that's the only reason I'm here, to make sure you guys aren't going off the deep end and saying ridiculous shit, scary shit. But clearly, I've not done my job, so.
Yeah, you didn't even know we were recording, so.
You're fired.
My asshole of the week is going to be the Uvalde cops. There was some body cam footage. Again, yeah, there's some body cam footage that has come out recently that they tried to hide. That's pretty disturbing, but all the same, I think the people should have been able to see it. And not a whole lot has been able to come from that disaster that happened, which actually was a year ago tomorrow.
Are we shocked by that?
No, not at all, especially because they're cops in Texas. But the other component I wanted to mention, too, is they are raising money to demolish the elementary school where the shooting took place to build a new one. And I understand the intention why they want to do that, but I'm also frankly bothered by the fact that what this elementary school is probably going to be is going to be a fucking fortress. And they're basically going to say
snipers everywhere.
Yeah, there's going to be fucking pillboxes in the parking lot and minefields and shit like that. Like, you're not willing to release the body cam footage. You're not willing to actually make any policy changes. You're not actually willing to prosecute the police officers that didn't fucking do anything.
Yeah.
But what we're going to be able to do is build a $75 million elementary school that's going to be similar to walking into a medieval castle. So I don't think that's going to land the way they think it's going to. They can't necessarily wash us away with blood money. So mm-hmm. Uvalde, collectively, the cops, the school district, congrats, you're the assholes again.
Yep. What can you do?
Yeah. Moving on to picks of the week.
Yeah.
Q, what you got?
So I got the new podcast from Chapo. It's on their feed. It's called Movie Mindset. It's Will Menaker, who's the kind of the main host of Chapo, and Hesse Denis. They basically kind of just each episode has a theme. I just listened to the first episode, which was basically about Tony Scott's relationship to Denzel Washington and their movies together. It was fucking great, especially because I love those fucking movies like Man on Fire, Unstoppable, Deja Vu. So definitely recommend, give it a listen. It's in the Chapo feed, so if you already listen to Chapo, it's
is Movie Mindset one you're gonna have to pay for moving forward, or are they just
not as of right now? I don't think so, but it could change. But I think at least the first few episodes are probably in the main feed.
Okay. Yeah, because I know that QAnon Anonymous also has that too, where they have kind of a branch off podcast that talks about like toxic masculinity dudes. That also lives within their feed as well.
Yeah. And I mean, if you become a Patreon for Chapo, it's like, I think $5 a month at worst. So
yeah, you'd probably also get Hell on Earth too, which was,
you do get Hell on Earth. Yeah.
Which was fucking excellent. Gatto, yeah. I know that you came to class unprepared today, but do you have something that you like that you want to share with people?
Who gave me the name, the chosen one?
You did.
Jesus Christ.
Not
Tom.
Yeah, okay. Actually, I would like to make my pick of the week.
Oh,
the Machine.
It looks so bad, but looks so good at the same time.
And that's the thing. I don't expect anything special out of it. In fact, I think the trailer is probably all of the funny parts of that movie. But I love Bert Kreischer.
I do too.
Bert, he's the man. He makes me feel good about my fatness.
I love how Mark Hamill is playing his dad.
Yeah, it's, you know what? I'm going to see it just to see if there's even one iota of, I mean, we've all heard the Machine stand up bit. It's great. It's awesome. I love it to death. I am interested in seeing how he turns this into some weird Russian mob kind of action thriller. And seeing where it goes. I mean, I don't have high expectations, but sometimes those are the best expectations because you can't be disappointed.
What worries me is that it comes out in 3 days and there are no reviews for it yet, which means probably no pre-early screenings that were allowed, which is usually a bad sign. And it's a whopping hour and 52 minutes, which also makes me very concerned because that movie should be, it should be like an hour and 20 clean.
It has very heavy, like, Larry the Cable Guy movie vibes.
For sure.
So
but I love Bert, so I will be willing to watch it just for him. So
we should go see this weekend.
You know, I would probably lump this into the kind of movie that Cocaine Bear was, where
I did not like Cocaine Bear, by the way.
You did not like Cocaine Bear?
No. I did not enjoy it.
That's unfortunate for you. That's really
I went into it like I'm fucking ready for this, and I was like, this movie's kind of shitty.
That's sad for you. But
yeah. Just weren't on enough cocaine.
I think there was plenty.
That was my all by my lonesome.
There was probably not nearly enough money enough cocaine for Brooks Koepka, but allegedly anyway.
You got to go see Cocaine Bear in 4K. They actually give you the cocaine. So when, like,
that
the cocaine...
4D, that 4D, the seat moves. And yep. Also, it, like, shoves coke in your nose, too.
Yes.
Nice.
Man, I thought I was special because I had a beer when I was in the movie theater to see Cocaine Bear.
What an elitist.
I know.
You go to movie theaters that serve alcohol?
Pretty much every movie theater at this point.
Yeah, it's every movie theater now.
What do you run a hedge fund? Oh my god!
Is firing on all cylinders today.
Killing it.
I'm lagging a little bit behind, like 2004 right now.
Yeah, you are way off base right now.
I'm running on a Windows 95 PC.
Very much so. So my pick of the week is actually not going to be a particular thing. But it's actually Memorial Day weekend this weekend.
Oh,
so,
no.
Are you going to do another TikTok?
False.
I might do another TikTok.
You got to do a TikTok.
We might do another one. So,
you got to bring back the TikTok from last year first.
Well, apparently I can't use the music because it offends other countries. At least that's what Instagram keeps telling
Libs.
Me. I know, right? This is why Truth Social is so much better. But Memorial Day weekend, always a great time. It's the kickoff of the summer. It's the official kickoff of the summer. It was also when Bordy Barn opened as well, too. Just a lot of good memories associated with it. It's typically like good weather, fun times, and it's a 3-day weekend. So if you have plans, I hope you enjoy them. If you don't have plans, make some. But ultimately, it's... Yeah, go enjoy yourself. It's the Indy 500 this weekend too, so have fun at that.
By the way, the Bordy Barn is coming back in a way.
I heard that.
Yeah, so it's going to be a beer garden at the same location. I don't know if it's going to be like honoring what Bordy Barn used to be, but oh, and he's gone.
No, I kicked him out.
No, okay. But it is coming back in a way, so there is no name yet. So I'm waiting to see what it's going to look like. But yeah,
I'd imagine just for branding rights, they'll probably try to keep the same one. I'm going to let him back in because
you that was your lesson.
Freedom of speech has been violated.
That was violence.
Yeah, that's I'm excited for. Like. I don't think I'll ever be able to go to that Bordy Barn because I think I'm probably 15 years past my prime.
Tom. The Bordy
That's
Barn.
That's not the reason.
The Bordy Barn's for everybody. Yeah. Tom's not to be trusted at the Bordy Barn because Tom
can't be let off a leash at the Bordy
Barn.
We're
not going to go. We'll save the story for another time. But Tom once spent over $200 at the Bordy Barn. Now, if you've ever been to the Bordy Barn, you wouldn't know that sounds like an impossible feat. It's like spending $200 at Taco Bell. It's just not possible. But he did it. So
I think it might be harder actually at Bordy Barn than Taco Bell.
It is because it's like what, $20 entrance fee and then the beers are $2. So do the math. $20, $180 in beer. Don't know how that's possible, but
to be fair though, they're little cups. They're not like 12 ounces. I have three cups
of beer in my hand, and Tom is trying to hand me another, and I'm like, I'm good.
I started throwing them out
after a while.
We were doing that like rack triangle thing where you're just trying to like group them all together in your hands and then keep them like that, and just you could get maybe six if you tried hard. You do the pinch. Sometimes you have to do the pinch. I was doing the five finger pinch with the cups. Couldn't hold on to them.
Yeah.
While trying to
hand me more, refusing to, like, when I say I'm good, refusing that sentiment.
The bartender's just like, nah, man, you can't order anymore. Give me 50.
To give you an example, Tom went up and said, I'll take 100 beers. And he went, nope.
Well, their loss, but I mean, we're only there for a couple hours. I'm taking a piss
in the Shirley Mastic train station woods.
Here for a time, not a long time.
Yep. All right, folks, on that note, that'll do it. Thanks for coming for another episode of the Second Mouse Podcast. If you get a chance, do us a favor and hit us a like and subscribe on YouTube, but also on our Instagram as well. We do this every week. Normally, Gatto is off,
either being
arrested, tortured.
Look, some of us have to earn money with our liberal arts degrees, okay?
True.
Yeah, that's fair. Go solve that debt ceiling crisis for us. And
already did. We're just going to default.
Lastly, if you want, let us know what the topics are you want us to cover, who your assholes of the week are, and who your picks of the week are. But outside of that, we will see y'all next week, folks.
I think my asshole is my asshole.
Okay, let's get me a rhythm. Follow me.
Then he says, and I'm not kidding, he goes, now clap.
Please clap.
Just clap for that, you stupid bastard.
I need applause to live.
Ha! Suck it, Jack Sparrow.